Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is wonderful to have your company for another episode of the podcast. Now today, my guest is quite an extraordinary business owner, an entrepreneur in the truest sense of the word and in the most positive sense of the word as well. Dr. Rashi Gupta owns multiple dental practices and multiple other businesses as well, including childcare centers, general anesthetic facilities, medical centers, cafes, and the like. And on top of that, she's built a real estate portfolio to support that. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about the past, where she's come from, and the lessons she learned as she got into practice ownership, and then how she's been able to grow her empire and expand that empire, and some of the lessons that she's learned as she's built this ecosystem of businesses. Now, this is an episode that I guarantee you is wrapped with lots and lots of gold. Rashi is very generous in her knowledge. She shares some of the innermost workings of her business to give you an insight into what she's learned, how she's operated to grow this business into what it is today. So as always, do have a pen and paper handy because there's lots and lots of pearls of wisdom. So without any further ado, let me introduce you to Dr. Rashi Gupta, and I hope you enjoy this as much as I enjoyed recording it for you. Rashi Gupta, thank you so much for joining the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have you here, my friend. How's things with you?
Pretty good. Thank you, Jesse.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come and join us. I've been looking forward to talking to you for a long time now. And obviously, we get to talk a little bit offline. And I know you've been doing some amazing things with your practices. And I'm really keen to spend some time today talking about a bit about the past, the present, and the future, sort of like where you've been, where you are, where you're going to, and some of the lessons along the way. Is that cool if we kind of go from that point of view?
Sounds good, Jesse. Thank you.
Perfect. So, Rashi, just so that we can get a bit of a sense of where you are right now, you own a couple of practices, but on top of that, you own a couple of other businesses around those practices as well. You've got a bit of an entrepreneurial ecosystem, as I like to call it. You've got an ecosystem of businesses, and there's been a lot of really good thinking, a lot of great strategy around that. I just wonder, for the sake of letting our audience know what sort of practices and businesses you run outside of dentistry as well, if you could just take a moment to share a little bit about what your current structures look like, you know, what sort of practices you have, how many, what are the other businesses and so on.
So at the moment, I've got two practices. One is an eight surgery practice. The other one's a two surgery practice. The eight surgery practice is in a precinct. We've got multiple businesses there. So we've got the dental surgery, a GA coming up. It's an accredited GA unit. And then we've got a Montessori cafe coming up in February. And we've got a medical center. So I think the whole ecosystem, like you said, really works well because it seems interconnected if you think about it. Patients are common, right? You've got the medical center, you've got the cafe, you've got the dental, you've got the GA. The GA will have specialists and plastic surgeons and gastros, all of them working there as well. So it just works really well with multiple businesses at the same place.
I'm curious to ask, Rashi, was that always your vision or was that something that came to you a little bit later on?
All right. So I've got a story behind this.
Okay.
When I bought my first practice, the Geelong practice, the eight surgery practice, I bought it and I was like, I need to move to the main road. Our practice was very interior. So you couldn't really see the main road at all. The location wasn't the thing with the practice. However, it was a very old practice, 1974.
Yep.
So we were busy. However, to me, the vision was always moving to a new location, always to the main road. We were about one street away. We were about one street away from the main road. And the practice was obviously old, 1974, come on. And then I remember buying the practice and I have a little red book. I remember writing down in the little red book and making a little diagram of a practice on the main road. Yeah. And for some reason, I have a radiology unit and I had a medical practice in there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. At that time, the Montessori wasn't on the cards. It happened quite later. And it was added on probably about 8 years later from where the first plan was made. And I was just kind of, I have a habit of planning things for the future and I'll draw things. And then I forget about it. I just close it up and forget about it. It's amazing how you think of things and then how they work out in time, even though you don't have it in front of you. It's on the in the back of your mind.
That's really an interesting thought. Have you always been that sort of person that plans out in a book and draws and sketches things? Is that how you operate normally?
Yes, I need to write down things. It's imagination is doing. I write down every little thing that I plan to do.
Rashi, before we get back to where you are, I'm curious to go back to the 1974 practice, which to me doesn't seem that old. Just I'm going to put it out there because I was born in 1971, so I'm keen to keep that pretty young. You know, when you bought that practice and you walked in, and yes, it was obviously well established, great goodwill, word of mouth, but not on the main street. What sort of practice was it when you bought it? What did you do in that first location to help grow it? How did you make the most of what it was before you moved into what is now the precinct?
When I first bought the practice, it was old. Yeah. We had old carpets, old cabinets. We were a paper-based practice.
Wow.
That should tell you a lot about the practice. We had lots of factories, so lots of tradies. Our patients were a lot of tradies, so they were great people, I must say. However, the practice was old and worn out. Within the first year, computers in,
yeah.
Systems in, OPG in, like so many changes. All the walls were plastered. We had that old brickwork,
yeah.
Which looks good on one wall, not all. So... Some of the rooms are like bright yellow. So we changed over quite a bit. I must say my staff as well, for them to kind of, because I kept most of the staff.
Yeah.
For them to make that big change is huge. You know, it's huge. They kind of accepted it and went on with it.
It's really interesting that you say that, because when we bought our second practice, it was probably similar vintage. We had really kind of long carpet in the waiting room. It was almost like that shag pile carpet. We had carpeted... it was like carpet wallpaper. It was really weird, and green walls. So maybe the same interior designer that did yours did ours. I'm not sure, but I want to ask you about the team. You said that the team came along that journey with you, which is fantastic, and that's not always the case. What was it that you did that had the team excited to come on that journey with you? Did you have to paint a picture for them in their mind so they could see it, where you're going, or were they just looking for that change anyway, or were they just kind of generally compliant people that went along with whatever you wanted to do? How did you bring that team with you?
Oh, no. When you bring about new changes, there will always be people in the team that rebel. Mm. Always. It was a lot of individual discussions with each one of them, especially the ones who had been in the practice way longer than me.
Mm.
I worked in the practice for a little while before buying it. However, a few of them, they were hard. It was hard work.
Yeah.
So lots of individual discussions, not in a group. You know, group would be more where I'm looking to go. So again, maps, drawing things,
yeah.
Showing them, you know, I want this practice to be one of the best practices. And for that, this is what we need to do. Of course, we increased the kind of work we did. Before I joined the practice, there was no implant work and no high-end work. So we yes. changed all that over time slowly. So now it's a majorly implant-based practice.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do Cerex. We didn't do all that. Everything's changed.
So when the team members who came on that journey with you, as you say, some of them have been there for a long time. What sort of challenges did you face with them? Was it like were they technologically proficient? Did they know how to use computers? Like when you went from paper-based to digital, was there an upskilling required? Were they all, you know, I guess because they came with that, they obviously all were nice people and had a good attitude, but what were the things or the skills that you needed to develop in them?
What worked for me is getting in younger staff.
Yeah, okay.
And I always had an older and a younger staff at the front desk, always. Even now.
Okay.
Yeah, it just works because one staff brings in the energy, the other one brings in the experience and the calmness to the front desk. So it's just always been my way of handling the front desk.
That's really clever. That's really clever. I didn't know that, Rashi. I mean, for all the time we've worked together, I did not know that. That's actually really clever. So deliberate strategy. So you've got the older person that brings the calmness, perhaps the relationship building skills that they've had for years as well. The younger person brings energy and perhaps a little bit of IT smarts with them. Is that fair?
That's right.
And so I'm curious to ask, when the patients come through the door, do the younger patients gravitate to the younger reception person and the old ones to the old person, or is it a bit of a mix? Or how does that – I'm just curious to ask how the patients respond.
So historically, I've always found the patients seem to go to the older one.
Ah.
I can't explain. You would think that they would, you know, kind of entertain the younger one as well, but no, they will always go to the older one, no matter what, unless the other person, you know, calls out to them.
Yeah.
I think that one older person at the reception is important to, for the patients to be comfortable.
Did you feel that retaining those existing staff, I have views on this as well, but from your perspective, retaining the staff from when you purchased the practice, do you feel that that was helpful in retaining the patient base as well? Was that a key factor for you?
All right. So yes and no. Initially, mm-hmm. you are just finding your feet when you buy a new practice. You think that's important. However, it is not.
Yes.
Every time, every single experience tells us the same thing. Not keeping the old ones and getting new ones in. However, when you join a new practice, you can't really start off with no one. You have to have the people in the practice for a while to understand the place before you start, you know, changing things too much.
Yeah.
So same thing for me, it was understanding first, because I didn't know anything about running a practice. It requires different communication skills. It's very different. I loved it. Initial 6 months, my God, the turnover was huge, except for the key people. They were good.
Yeah.
But 1 year later, now we are pretty good. Like, now it's been years now.
Yeah.
But 1 year later, the turnover, you know, I started to understand people more. God, the number of books I read. The number of people I used to talk to, like, how am I supposed to manage this? Ego hassles, but it's both ways, isn't it? Ego hassles. So one person calms down, the other person calms down as well. So there's a lot of give and take.
So what was the biggest lesson that you learned in those early days of practice ownership? Obviously, it's a bit of a baptism of fire when you first take on a practice. What was the number one skill that you had to learn to take over that existing business? Was it around communication? Was it around leadership? Was it, which are obviously very closely related, was it something else?
I think communication. Mm. Communication brings the team together. I still remember when I would ask someone to do some work, I would say, do it. I wouldn't understand what the issue was. And so just getting over that mindset. It's a simple thing. Can I please request you to do this, if that's okay with you? Do you have the time? Do I need to cover you? So understanding all those, you know, understanding how much time it'll take them instead of saying, do it now, please.
Yeah.
I'm a very now person, and that's good and bad. Because I'm a, you know, if I want to do something, I want it done now. It's good because I get things sorted. It's bad because sometimes I can get the wrong side of people. Without realizing.
Rashi, I think we might be two peas in the same pod on that one. I'm a now person too, and I sometimes have to insert softeners into my language to make sure that I don't speak too directly so as to ruffle any feathers, basically, is what I'm trying to say. I have to kind of tone it down a little bit. I want to come back to this vision that you had when you had your little red book and you're drawing the radiology unit and all the other things in there. How long was it from the time of that drawing until that vision became a reality?
Oh, my God, a long time, Jesse, a long time. So that was 2012.
Yep.
I made everything. And then in 2023, we've opened up now. Started off about 2-3 years ago, but the vision, there's been things going on in the background forever. So it all started with I bought the first land. I done implants for my mom.
Yep.
She got really, really emotional and sent me quite a bit of money. Didn't know what to do with it. I didn't want to spend it. So I bought the house. I did the down payment for the house.
Yep.
And that was the first house I bought. Sorry, I'm used to saying we bought because it's me and my husband for all these things. So I'm going to keep it with that because it's an ode to him as well.
Of course. You guys make a great team.
Thank you. So slowly over the next few years, we bought one property after another. I must say, when we first bought the property, we kept it like that for about a year. And then Bunnings opened up right next. And then the light bulb. Light bulb moment. So that's when we started buying more and more properties. That took us, I remember almost everything was done. There was this one property in the corner that we were unable to buy. Those people were separating and they were completely losing it. They didn't want to sell.
Yeah.
It took us almost 2 years. We used to send a message every month, at least once or twice. Have you changed your mind? Would you like to, sell now? Ultimately, 2 years later, they sold.
Wow.
They're sold.
Now, just I know how many properties you had to negotiate, but I don't know, are you comfortable saying how many properties you had to acquire to get this precinct built?
About 12.
So the reason I'm asking that, I mean, yes, that's a lot of land, but as people became aware that you were buying it, did that make negotiation more difficult as time went on?
Oh, good Lord, yes. The first property we bought was, so the first property and the last property we bought, four times the price.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Easily four times the price because people started realizing towards the end, what's going on? You know, I still remember we had this this lady, this old librarian, beautiful lady, and she was staying in the same house as her dad's house.
Yeah.
She was single. She didn't ever want to leave.
Okay.
Wanted her to obviously move to a different place so we could, you know, build. There was nothing we could get. We just couldn't get through to her.
Yeah.
So, in proposition, asked her to buy any house in the surroundings, and whatever the cost would be, we'd pay her the cost for that house, the new house she would buy.
Wow, okay.
Now, and we were lucky in the way that, yes, she bought the new house and she moved, but she wasn't overly greedy. She did the right thing by us. And that's what I feel when you negotiate and both of you walk with a win, you know, both of you have wins. It's beautiful.
And have you maintained a relationship with that lady since the sale?
Once in a while.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Messages. So you've gone and negotiated and I know your husband's a very skilled negotiator and he's had to work hard on this as well. What lessons did you learn about human nature as you were negotiating all these property deals?
There's always a way out.
Yeah.
It's sometimes you feel like you've hit a brick wall and nothing's going to work.
Yeah.
You find there's always a way out. At the last minute when you're about to kind of think, it's not working out, what do we do? Patience. Yeah. Just keep going. Always works out. Just yesterday I had one of my patients, he's a plumber. He walked in and he goes to me, oh, did you do all this? I was like, yeah, we did. And he goes, you both are really nice people. Because the builder that we were building with, Lloyd, they collapsed. And so we had to negotiate with all the tradies ourselves.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And obviously when these things happen, tradies don't get paid and we've already paid the bank, for example. Oh. So it's double trouble for us. But we managed to make it all positive. So it's positive in the community. We never want to make it and, you know, make money out of people or give them a bad deal.
Yeah.
So it's worked out. We kept 97% of the trades pretty much.
Oh,
the same trades that are worked for Lloyd.
Wow, that's phenomenal. That's really phenomenal. So I think there's a good life lesson there, isn't there? When things look a little bit stuck or you feel like you're at a dead end, just to have some patience and it will sort itself out. It will resolve itself. Is that fair?
100%.
It's interesting. Rashi, I've been thinking a lot. There's a particular YouTube clip that I like and it's Tom Hanks and he's talking to a group of actors around a table and they talk about the phrase, this too shall pass. And Tom Hanks is saying, you know, when you can't get a job and no one wants to hire you, you know, this too shall pass. And then there's times when you're riding high and everything's perfect, this too shall pass. You know, the pendulum always comes back to the middle, right? And so what I wanted to ask you, as you've gone about building this precinct and you've had the vision in your little red book and you've gone through the negotiation phase, how did you feel when you saw this little picture in your book turn into the reality that you now have and you walk around and you can see it and you can touch it? What's it feel like for you to have taken that dream, that vision, and turned it into reality?
It's beautiful. It feels unbelievable sometimes just walking through through their new practice. And every time I've had patients walk in, patients I've been seeing for years, they walk in, they go, oh my God, is this for real?
Oh,
and
wow.
You think to yourself, is this for real? Like, what happened? How did they change so much? How did all this like happen over, it's 30, it's like such a long time. It doesn't feel like it.
No.
It doesn't feel like it. Yeah, it's just a blur, the time. Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
And what have you learned about yourself in this process?
I think I just don't give up.
Yeah.
I think I just don't stop learning. And I've learned to calm down. I'm a very, you know, I can't stop going. I'm just one of those batteries that don't need to be powered up.
Comes with batteries included, right?
Pretty much. So I find that hard.
Yeah.
I still remember ages ago, I was doing this course and the lady who was doing the course told, she goes to me, she goes, I don't know how you'll handle doing lesser patients in the day than you normally work because you're just so full on. I don't know if you can manage that. I still remember her saying that to me. And like now I'm doing lesser patients. I'm kind of doing lesser days. And I still find I'll still be hovering around the practice, helping others, talking to others, you know, mentoring others, helping the front desk. It's just how I am. I can't change that.
Well, it's a really interesting point because as you go from being, I guess, an operator of a business, so the typical practice owner who's self-employed in their practice and they're doing a lot of hands-on clinical work, and a lot of their time is taken up seeing patients and you know, running the team and all that sort of stuff kind of fits in and around that. When you cross the leverage line to scale up, when you build the team and the systems and the accountability structure and so on, your role shifts. And as you've articulated this just in what you said is you're now mentoring others, you're supporting the team, you're doing other things. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the mindset shift and the role change as you've gone into the new premises. And then equally, maybe we'll talk about that separately, but then I'll talk to you a little bit about like the ecosystem of the businesses and how to manage that separately as well. But just for now, how have you found that role change from going such a full-on, hands-on clinician to now kind of working with others to help them be the best that they can be? What's that been like for you?
I'm loving it.
Yeah.
I'm just absolutely loving it. I love kind of mentoring my dentist, and I love when their eyes kind of go, well, what? You could do that as well. I just absolutely love it. And I think that's the next step for me, getting into mentoring.
Yep.
That's my thing. The more I do it, the more I like it. I would like to get me and some of my staff members, some of my dentists are amazing. They're absolutely amazing at what they do and absolutely amazing human beings as well, because some of them I've known for years now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I really want to bring them up. And I would like to get into mentoring, making that. So we've got some extra land there, probably getting into teaching as well, you know, mentoring other dentists as well, as a team, not just me.
Yeah, 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 sharing your expertise and their expertise as well. What have been the challenges as well? Because it's all an overwhelmingly positive experience, I know. I can hear in your voice and see in your face that it's been quite the journey, in a very positive sense. Were there any little moments of frustration or difficulty, or what challenges did you encounter and how did you overcome them, whether it's the building process or managing a bigger team? What have been the challenges?
There have been lots of challenges, Jesse, lots of challenges. So managing the team, for example, it's the front desk. I have a leadership team as well.
Yes.
I seem to feel that the leadership team is not enough even now. So even now I feel, okay, I need more people in there. I need a HR person in there. There's team issues. When you have so many people, different people in the team, kind of appreciating all the differences that we have between all of us is important. Managing all that has been hard. Different characters, different way of thinking. So I might have one person handle, like, for example, the front desk perfectly. And no issues. That I might have the second person go, this is too much work, I can't handle it.
Yeah.
So handling stuff like trying to understand what is right and how much responsibility to give everybody. Because it's really important. Everybody has a clear message as to what their duty is. So that's been one of the things that's been hard. We have regular meetings every week for the whole staff to help with all that. Little knowledge gaps, making sure that don't keep going with the team.
I want to ask you a little bit about the importance of clarity of roles for your team. How has that been as you've gone into the bigger place? Has that become really important? I guess there's more people equals more complexity equals more opportunity for misunderstanding. So can you talk to me a little bit about the clarity of roles you've had to provide your team members as you've gone through?
So lots of files, lots of files. We have a work drive that we put all us all the information into. And then all the roles are defined clearly in the offer letter, of course. But then we have separate files for the front desk. So if somebody new is taking over, they've got to go through the whole file. They've got to go through all your videos, Jesse, before they even sit at the front desk. So God, that's up. It has been such a positive with that. But again, like treatment coordinator, we've just brought in a treatment coordinator. One of the girls who was working at the practice, I could say she had something special about her. So I've got into the treatment coordinator role. And it's just been a month. And I think 2 weeks in, and she's already got, she's doing so well.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Again, she started with the course, treatment coordinator, and she's been doing so good. So the complexity, I never thought I'd have a treatment coordinator. Never thought of it. Uh-huh. But again, the file's been made for her, all the things that they've got to do, and SOPs of everything. You know, you accessing super, what are you doing? So anybody else can take over. That's the other thing. I always have a second person who can take over from that one.
Yeah.
Person who's managing the main, so that lesser headaches.
Yes.
So we try to put everything into both the work drive and in written. So everybody's different. Some people are, you know, they like to see and read everything. Some people like to hear.
Yeah.
And make notes.
I love
that. So that's what we do.
I think that's really fantastic, Rashi. What I also really just want to highlight, I think this is a key lesson for people listening, and that is having that second person as well. So there's an understudy there. So if your main person is sick or away or you know, whatever, then you've got another backup person. Rashi, can we talk a bit about the other businesses for a second? Because as we started this conversation about the ecosystem, it's like an entrepreneurial ecosystem. And I love business. I love thinking about it all day. It's kind of my hobby. It's my passion. And I love seeing other businesses come into life as well. And so I'm curious to ask about the cafe. I'm curious to ask about the Montessori school. I'm curious to ask about the childcare. And I'm curious to ask about how and why those things came to being. Was it part of the Little Red Book, or was it an idea that your husband had, or how did that come about?
Right. So going back quite a bit, our husband always wanted to do his own business. He was in IT, so he's an engineer and MBA in marketing. That's why he's a good negotiator as well. He was doing IT, he was a project manager, wanted to open up a hospital. That was his thing. He wanted to open up a big hospital or a big school. And he tried his hands at, I don't know how many, you know, little businesses, and I was losing it with him. I was like, you've got to get onto one thing and just stick with it. He was at the exhibition center in Melbourne, and he just overheard crossing a room. He just overheard somebody talking about the Montessori, way of studying. And her name was Amy, I still remember. And it all started from there. They started talking, they just had tea time, and she came out and they started talking, and there we go. That was it. That's how the Montessori came to be.
You have two Montessori childcare centers, is that correct?
That's right.
So one in the first location, one in the second location?
Yes.
So tell me a bit about managing that versus managing a dental practice. Do you find it the same? Do you find it quite different? I imagine there's some crossover there, but there's no doubt a couple of nuances and differences. But tell me what your experience has been running that.
So I think it's a lot easier running a Montessori compared to dental, especially if you're working in it.
Yes.
With the Montessoris, they're pretty much well equipped with their own people.
Yes.
A senior doesn't have to go to work. He's managing the place. And that's the whole point. Because he's managing, he can look at only the top bits. He doesn't need to. He's got people running it. He's got a director running it. And he doesn't have to go into the room. He doesn't have to do anything. However, he's still part, because he's Montessori trained. He just lectures the present staff about the Montessori view of education. So that's all he does. But really, when I say that's all he does, there's lots of other things.
Of course, yes.
But not day-to-day running.
Yes.
And that's what I love about what he's doing. However, for me, there's a lot more going on. So I think if you ask as an owner perspective, I think his systems or his business is better than mine.
I think they're both pretty good, just to be fair. It's not like one's bad and one's good. I think they're both good. Have you learned anything from running a childcare center that's applicable to running a dental practice and vice versa?
The biggest thing has been delegating.
Yeah.
That's what I keep keep feeling I need to do more delegation. I'm doing a lot more. I was a very different kind of a person before. Everything had to go through me. Everything I had to do, manage. I had to manage myself. You'd understand that, you know, control. And it's changed over time. Now I'm happy to delegate, and I'm happy to trust people to do it the way I've told them. And just get back to me for any clarity, all that. But I have people managing things that I don't even know what's happening deeply about it. Like, I would just know the basics, what's going on, and I will just notice things. That's about it. But not micromanagement, not the way I was. You know, the high turnover was the reason for micromanagement. Yeah. opposite.
So that's a really interesting comment. Do you feel like your ability to delegate has obviously improved as you've gone along the journey, right? And so what's been the impact of that for you? Because I've known you for a few years now, and I have an expression. Actually, I should say I know an expression. I don't even know if I made it up or if I picked it up from somewhere, so I don't want to claim credit for it just in case, but I honestly don't know where it came from. And that is, your desire for control is inversely proportional to your ability to scale up. So have you found that your growth has accelerated now that your ability to delegate has improved, or has there been any discernible difference in that at all, or not?
Definitely. That's the secret. You just have to delegate. Like, I can't, if I knew this before, life would have been so much easier. So the earlier you realize that in life, the better.
Okay. Let me ask, because I think there'll be people listening to this going, I get it, but I kind of still find it hard. Why do so many dentists, do you think, struggle with delegation? And if you're going to talk to someone listening to this podcast and say, this is what I found helpful in terms of delegating, what would be your insights around that?
I would suggest try delegating and giving up the work. We as dentists think you'll find all dentists saying, oh, that person only wants to see me. Yeah. We all say that. However, I have tried to, during this time of learning how to do that, I've tried to move my patient to another dentist, and they come out happy. They're fine. Yeah. They've been taken care of. So I think we need to let go. It gives you freedom, so much freedom. It's like, sometimes I still find it hard, but I let go. I'm learning to let go big time. So to all the dentists, I would just say, try letting it go. And it will be okay. It will be okay.
Can I ask a question? Because, you know, what we're talking about is one of those things that's kind of easy enough to understand but not always easy to do, if that makes sense, because there's an emotional thing caught up with it. When you delegated and things didn't work out, there's a natural tendency for most of us as dentists to want to take that task back on because we feel like our reputation might be hurt or the patient care is going to suffer or whatever. How did you deal with the situations where you delegated something to someone and it didn't quite work out as well as it could have or ought to have? Did you obviously, you know, try not to take it back on? Was it a case of more training or how did you manage that? Because there's the logistics of it, but then there's the emotional side of it as well.
One-on-one meetings. That's my thing. I have a clinical coordinator. I'd sit with her and discuss, well, we wanted this to happen. This hasn't quite worked out. How can I help?
Yeah.
Let's understand what the issues are. And then I'll work out what we can do, time duration to work it out, and to report it back to me by, say, you know, in 1 week, close of business hours.
Yeah.
And then that's it. I'll book a meeting with her, and then we'll talk about it again.
Great.
So that's how I do it.
Okay, so let me just decode this for listeners. There's a one-on-one meeting, which means that it's private, so we're not trying to criticize in public and undermine that person's self-esteem. We're delegating outcomes, not just the task itself. You know, this is the outcome I want to achieve. I don't want to just delegate A, B, and C. This is the outcome we wanted to achieve. We didn't achieve it. What went wrong? What help do you need? And then a follow-up to make sure that, you know, you're not off the hook. We're coming back to talk about this again, right? Which breeds accountability, correct?
Very important to have a date to talk about it again. Otherwise, nothing ever happens. So to me, it's mandatory.
Ladies and gents listening to this podcast, just go back and listen to it again. The mandatory to have a date piece is critical because if we don't have that, nothing changes. So again, I really, really appreciate you sharing that. Rashi, as a leader, yeah, as you scale up, yeah, this we talk about different levels of leadership. First lead ourselves, then lead others, and then develop other leaders, and then help them develop other leaders. How have you identified leaders or leadership potential in your team? What sort of skills or attributes or personality traits are you looking for in someone where you go, you know what, they might be a good person to step up to the next level? Like your treatment coordinator, what was it about them that you identified and went, they've got something special?
These are my secrets. So I basically look for really active people. The first thing I look at when people walk into the practice is how they're walking. If they're walking too slow and deliberate, I know that's not my kind of person.
Right.
So it's from there. So the interview is probably a fail already. If they're walking in really slowly, and with the treatment coordinator we were talking about, from day one, all I heard from every single dentist that she worked with, God, she's amazing. One of the best people you've got. Surprisingly, I got her from Facebook.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Very, very onto things. I would give her tasks and they were done. And she would send me a message saying, Rashi, done. What else do I need to do? You know, does it look right to you? So it was just her way of, she was very active at the beginning. I remember when I told her, I would like you to be the treatment coordinator. I'd like to train you. She goes, what did you see in me? What did you see in me? And it's just being very, very active and being proactive for everything, for just about everything, and getting onto things. Not being shy. So that helps, because otherwise you'll keep thinking, oh, what the other person think? It's really important to kind of just get on with it. So, yeah.
So obviously, Rashi, I know you've got some really, you know, high quality people on your team. And let's just keep talking about this treatment coordinator. And I'm sorry, I don't know her name, but if she's listening, thank you for being such a good role model for the practice. What I'd like to ask you is keeping your best people, because when you find those gems, right, you want to hang on to them. You want them to stay in the practice. You want them to grow and to develop and so on. Do you have any particular strategies for how you retain your best people?
Quite a few strategies as well, actually.
I'm sorry, this is all the secrets, isn't it? It's like putting Rashi on the couch and opening up your head and having a look inside.
Well, Jesse, so I support them through thick and thin. That's one.
Could you give some examples of that? Sorry, Rashi, what do you mean by support? Because is that emotional support, financial support, learning support? What sort of support do you mean?
A bit of everything, but mainly I support them with their learnings. So I have one of my nurses kind of becoming a lab technician. I have another nurse doing the cert, you know, like different courses and like the treatment coordinator role.
Yep.
I take my nurses and my front desk for courses. So my dentist for courses.
Yeah.
So I find doing these courses, it really, really helps seeing similar people and kind of interacting with them and understanding where they stand and what they're getting for working with us or working with me, right?
Yeah,
so
correct.
All that support. So the people that I've supported for further studies and all that, like, and I have set up the business account for them as well. Lots of things have been done for certain people the way they like them. So they feel special and they feel they're important.
So what I'm hearing in there, Rashi, there's quite a lot in what you've just shared. So again, just for the listeners, let me decode some of this. There's opportunities for learning and growth. There's obviously the support that goes with that, which comes with providing the opportunities, but also the emotional support, the time support, the creating the environment for them to grow, which I think is wonderful. There's obviously, you know, as you said, career progression, I think, is really important. You know, so people can see a future in your practice that goes beyond their current role, like the nurse becoming the lab technician. Not many people kind of see a career structure in dentistry when they're working in private practice. So you're providing pathways for them, which I think is fantastic. And then, of course, you've got the team culture as well, which is obviously something you've worked very hard on as well, which is something I wanted to ask you about is, can you tell us a little bit about your team culture? What's the vibe like in your practice? You know, how does everyone interact? I'm imagining it's a high energy workplace because, you know, you're obviously recruiting for high energy people. You're specifically looking for people who walk quickly, who get things done, you know, high tempo. What is the vibe like in your practice?
Positive.
Yeah.
My one word answer for you, positive. I strive on positivity.
Yeah.
Like I can't handle or I refuse to handle, you know, negativity. When I have people, even during the interviews, that's the first thing I ask them. It's an attitude.
Yeah.
Negative attitude, not for my team. Just not, no, thank you. So yeah, that's the biggest thing. Everybody helping each other.
Yep.
No ego hassles. So many times my nurse would be working with me and she knows she can leave anytime and get the float to work with me or somebody else to work with me because she's got to do some extra work.
Yeah.
There's no questions asked there. So just kind of trusting each other in terms of what's going on in the workplace. If one person's missing, the other person knows to take over.
Yeah.
You know, not crazy. Just get on with it. Just get on with it.
I really like that. Now, I want to ask you specifically, you know, there'll be a lot of people say, oh, that sounds amazing. I wish I had that. And they can have that, but they've got to create that, right? And so I want to ask you just if you've got one or two little tips for creating that positive atmosphere, some of the little things you might have done by design or intentionally to create that positive atmosphere. How did you do that?
I'll give you a little example here. And it worked really well. It was our usual Thursday morning meeting. I walked out and I was thinking, I need a bit of energy here and it's feeling a little bit dead. So walked in, I got my front desk to make little, to cut up a sheet, two or three white sheets into little bits of paper and little bits and get some pens. We got in the meeting room and I said, everybody will write, can you please write the name of one person, any staff member, not my name, anybody else, who's helped you during the past 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So any one person. And it was surprising. The result was surprising. The amount of energy in the room was surprising. And the name that came out of it was a person who was never talked about. She was one of those quiet achievers.
Oh, wow.
I gained so much from that. Team gained so much for that. We didn't even know that she was doing all this work. And when people realized, we all just looked at her thinking, wow, how come we didn't even know about her? A very quiet achiever, that one.
And how did she feel being recognized? She would have loved it, I'm sure.
She loved it. You could see the difference in her next few weeks, just in her walk.
Yep.
Just the smile. Like, it was beautiful. It was really, really nice.
Rashi, I want to talk a little bit about the future with you. What's that look like? Yeah, have you got plans in your little red book for other pictures to come to life? What have you been putting in your little red book that is yet to be fulfilled?
At the moment, the book has 8 surgeries fully equipped and fully booked for the 6 days of work. Yeah. At the moment, that's what's going on because we've just opened up. We've just moved about 2 months ago.
Yes.
So at the moment, it's about getting all that working first and lots of advertising, lots of other things that we're doing along with it because still the GA and the CAF is not quite up. So the first 1 or 2 years is just getting all that sorted. Once that is done, so obviously you'll have real estate,
yes,
right, by the end of it.
Yes.
You know that. Now, depending on how everything goes, I have another plan for another place in 5 years, but we'll have to look at how things are going before we plan to replicate what we have somewhere else.
Yeah, I love it. So for people who have been thinking about having businesses outside of dentistry, you know, do you think that that's something that everyone should think about? Do you think that you need to be a particular way for, you know, do you need a particular mindset for it? What's your thoughts about that? Is it a really value add or can it be a distraction for some people? I'm just curious to get your thoughts on, you know, obviously it's worked very well for you and that's a clear statement. But for other people, is it a replicable strategy or is it something that you kind of go, oh, maybe it's for everyone or not for everyone? What's your thoughts?
I think there should always be something else as well. It's always a value add. It's like putting all your eggs in one basket.
Mm.
I don't think that's a very good idea. It's a very cliche thing to say, but it's very, very true. Businesses can have ups and downs. We all noticed during COVID
yes.
that we had times. So when that happened, when COVID happened and dentistry was kind of, you know, a bit down because we couldn't see patients, the Montessori was doing fine because the government was helping Montessori. So sometimes having an extra business or a value-add business or a different business for that matter can help you during those, you know, troubled times in troubled waters, they can be a big save.
Rushi, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today, and it's been such a pleasure to actually watch your journey over the last few years. You've done an incredible job. You and the team have really built something terrific and wonderful, and you know, no doubt you feel really proud, and you should feel really proud. What I'd really like to say to you is I can't wait to see the rest of the vision unfold. I can't, one day maybe I'd love to see this little red book and just flip forward a few pages to see what's coming down the pipeline. But I want to congratulate you on a tremendous job that you've done. And I also want to say thank you so much for sharing those insights, those lessons, those perspectives with our audience today. You've been really generous. I just want to say thank you. It's I could talk to you for days about this because it's fascinating and interesting. But from all of us here, appreciate your time and thank you so much.
Thank you, Jesse. It's been lovely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.